All right, welcome back, and we are going to start with the last three of the case studies. The first one we're going to do is number 38, case study submission number 38. So if you're listening in on the recording, go ahead and open this case, read through it, look at the supporting documentation, take some notes, and then have a go at listening. So we're looking at Debbie, who's a 62-and-a-half-year-old female. She's 4'11½". Boy, Debbie, you're little, and 117 pounds. She's a physician, a wellness coach, and a Medju trainer. I'm not sure what a Medju trainer is. Hang on, because I don't have.
Okay, Medjutainer uses performing arts to integrate it into health education programs. I'm a professional entertainer, and I decided I want to combine the things I love most: teaching and wellness, and singing and performing.
Wow, I love it.
And sometimes I bring maracas and tambourines and pass them around and get the whole place shaking, and do food programs and do some songs about food, like Food, Glorious Food from Oliver, and just get people loosened up, having fun, and everybody has them all.
Oh, that's awesome. I love it. And you coined that name, huh? The Medjutainer. I love it. Hopefully you got the URL for it.
What's that?
I hope you got a URL for it. www.medjutainer.com.
6 months before I went to get Medjutainment, another company that does online medical continuing education took the copyrighted the term Medjutainment. So I got to check out how to use Medjutainer.
Yeah, that could be sticky. Oh, well. All right, so let's go through Debbie's case. And Debbie's on the line, so if we have any questions, we can ask. She has osteoporosis. Her most recent DEXA scan, which was 2003, -3.5. Which was no significant change from April 2011, which was -3.8, after 2 years on a Life Extensions Foundation protocol. So, Debbie, explain to people what those numbers mean. At first glance, we would think that 3.8 to 3.5 is, well, it's an improvement. So explain to people those numbers and what your target is. What do you want those to be?
Osteopenia is thinning of the bone, and that's a -1.5. Osteoporosis is diagnosed when it goes down, and this is the density of the bone. This is dual electron photometry or something like that. It's a technique that measures bone density, but not bone health necessarily.
Right.
-2.5 is a criteria to diagnose osteoporosis. Mine has been -3.5.
Well, was it first diagnosed in 2011, or obviously it's been going that way for a while? When was the first time you got wind of it?
It was probably at least eight years ago, and it was an incidental finding. One of my medical meetings did a screen of wrists, and the machine broke down, and they said, oh, we're sorry, we'll give you a voucher to get a full regular DEXA scan, and it turned up, I think, -2.1 or something like that then, or almost 2.5. It was bad then.
It was almost there,
And I started on the drugs for what they were worth.
Right.
And then
well, that's what your training gave you, right? That's what you were trained to do.
Yeah.
And how long did you stay on the drugs?
What's that?
How long did you stay on the drugs, or are you still on them?
Oh, no. I got off that about 3-4 years ago after developing erosive esophagitis, which I didn't know I had because I didn't have symptoms, but I had my voice teacher directed me to a voice pathologist for voice problems. She did a scope of the vocal cords and found LPR, laryngopharyngeal reflux. And I said, well, wait a minute, what's that? She says, it's acid reflux. I said, well, if there's reflux all the way up at my vocal cords, I better find out what's going on between there and my lower esophageal sphincter. So I was one of the first ones in Cincinnati who had the PillCam, which is that capsule-sized camera, has 12 scintillating cameras, and you swallow this thing while you're lying down recumbent, and it takes pictures, and that was how we found the erosive esophagitis.
And that's due to the Fosamax?
That was from the Fosamax.
Right. Because they tell you when you take Fosamax, you're not allowed to lay down afterwards. You have to stay up. It's really for all those reasons, right?
Terrible. Okay. But I just have to, I said somewhere in here that the prednisone was started 25 years ago for a severe, horrendous, god-awful cough that I used to call the monster cough that developed while I was in medical school. Every time I got a cold twice a year, I would get a cough so bad that I pulled muscles, I threw up meals, I cracked ribs on two occasions, and none of my colleagues could help. I went through methacholine challenge test for asthma. It was like a post-viral cough that was just this horrendous raw throat, and I literally could not go like 3 minutes without coughing all night, all day, couldn't sleep, and I thought I was going to die before I was 45.
Did they ever look at you for esophagitis at that point? I mean, is it possible that you had already started to develop that and then the Fosamax threw you over the edge with that?
I don't know, because that was never really a significant symptom.
Yeah.
So it never really got evaluated other than going around from specialist allergist, pulmonologist, all these guys just sort of threw up their hands and looked at me like I was crazy. I couldn't even get through a conversation. If patients walked in a room with perfume, I would go into paroxysms of coughing so bad that sometimes they asked if they should call 911.
Wow.
And it didn't change until 1997 in April when I started taking a compound homeopathic from Rexall. Their Defendol changed my life.
Wow.
I still get it occasionally, much less severe. Half as long. It used to last 10 to 12 weeks every time I got it. I spent upwards of 20 to 24 weeks a year coughing my guts up.
Oh, wow. Okay, and this Defendol is a homeopathic formulation, no other stuff, no pharmaceuticals in there, no herbals?
Right.
Wow, the power of homeopathy.
And at the time I started it, I didn't believe in homeopathy. I thought it was a lot of bunk, but a colleague suggested, I'll make him happy, it's cheap enough, I'll try it, it won't work, and then back
then
to suffering.
Right.
And within a week, I woke up one morning and realized I'd fallen asleep and wasn't awakening coughing. I said, it's incredible, I haven't done anything different, except, of course, that homeopathic, it couldn't be that, or could it? And then I decided to stay on it, and then I thought, wow, this shortened the course of it. I wonder if I stay on it, if maybe it'll prevent it. And then, I'll never forget, I was performing in a musical theater production with our big theater company here, and I got a cold the week before during Tech Week when we're all rehearsing 5 hours a night for 6 days. And I got a cold the week before, and I said, oh, my God, I won't be able to perform. And the cold ended, and that's when I normally would start the cough, and I didn't get the cough for the first time in 25 years.
Wow.
And that was being on that homeopathic. And it was incredible.
Amazing. Well, it's good to know, even for people, we deal with this all the time, right, that chronic cough after a cold. Maybe I've never heard of anybody having it quite as severe as you, but if it worked for you, imagine what it could do for our people that are just you know, cough for 2 or 3 weeks after a cold. So great to know. Write that down, everybody. Rexall Defendol. I'll pull it up again so you can see it. Defendol. Rexall Defendol. Cool. All right. So let's keep going. You had some injuries.
Really interesting fact. My mother also has osteoporosis. She's 85. Her numbers are not as bad as mine. Her DEXA is minus 2.5 T-score. She bent over 6 months ago and fractured in two places from bending.
Oh.
I fell on the ice a year and a half ago and slammed onto my left side and did not fracture my hip. And I have to believe that the supplements, especially the strontium, are doing something.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily showing up in the density. And we know that a lot of times with Fosamax, and you didn't even get improvement with Fosamax, usually improves the density, but it really doesn't improve the strength. It makes thicker, more brittle bone. So
yeah, and that's what happened. I actually got some improvement initially on the Fosamax. I'm thinking I'm doing better. Then I just continued everything when I got the esophagitis. I said, that's it, I'm done with drugs. I don't have any drugs at all for anything now. But the DEXA has gone up and down since then, and I'm just so disappointed. 2 years on the life extension protocol, and it's down to -3.5. Now, it didn't get any worse. It got a tad better from 2 years ago and the same as it was a year ago, but that's not good enough. I want to be mountain climbing again and spelunking and whitewater rafting. And I'm afraid.
Well, tell me this, Debbie. Have you done the NTX to see what the actual bone metabolics are?
That was included with the documents that you have. I did bone resorption.
Okay, we'll look at that. Yeah, we'll look at that. I will say I didn't go through everybody's cases in advance because that would have taken me an extra 10 hours. So I'm going through this. I'm seeing these things for the first time. I scan them, of course, but I'm seeing them mostly for the first time. So, okay, great. So the life extension protocol seems to be their bone restore bone strength that include calcium, minerals, et cetera, strontium, citrate, vitamin D, blood levels was 67 on 5,000. Was that taken during the winter time, or what time of year was that tested?
That was April last year.
Okay, that's the last time you tested it?
Yeah, I had been doing it every 6 months, and I just haven't had a chance this year, and I've got the package sitting here. I do the finger stick test with the University of California, grassrootshealth.net.
Okay, and the 5,000 you've been doing since the last test a year ago?
I actually bumped it up to 10,000. I'm still on 10,000, and I haven't tested it on 10,000 yet.
Okay, yeah, good thing to do because you don't want to go into too much, right? You don't want to go into excess.
And that's interesting because supposedly it's not linear. I bumped my mother's because she was only like 42 or 47. She went from 5,000 to 10,000 units and went from 45 to 111, and her doctor down there in Florida freaked out.
Yeah, it's not too bad. I mean, I like to keep it at around 100. So she's not going to run any risk.
Freak out if it's over 45 or something.
Yeah. Well, all the research that I've seen shows that when you get in the range of 100, the incidences of various kinds of cancers goes way down. So it's especially prostate, breast, and colon. So I'd rather have a little bit high vitamin D and decrease my risk of those kinds of cancers. However, you don't want to have it jump up, and it isn't linear. You're right. I've had people who have started on. I put them on 20,000 units because their vitamin D was in 8. And I asked them to do that for a month or 6 weeks and then retest. And if they weren't going to retest, if they didn't want to spend the money to retest at that point, to drop it to 10,000 and then go because I was concerned. I had one person do that and came back to see me a year and a half later. And I said, so how are you doing on your vitamin D? If you didn't get it tested, I see it's not in your lab results that you brought in. He said, no, I haven't gotten it retested again. I said, well, how much are you taking now? And he said 20,000 like you told me to. And it was a year and a half, and I was like, oh, my God, vitamin D toxicity. He got it tested, and it was 65 on 20,000 units for a year and a half. When you look at it's amazing, right? But he probably has one of those VDR receptor problems that show up in the genetics, right? So he needed more. Same thing, another person. Hers was also in the single digits. I said 20,000, 6 weeks, retest. She went back. She went from 8 to 105 in 6 weeks. So,
wow.
Right? Amazing. And I've had everything in between. That's why I always say, if you're going to go on a high dose because you've got a low number, retest it at 6 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks.
GeneWise does the genetic screening that shows two different genes for vitamin D, and I suspect a lot of those differences in response to vitamin D are the people who are homozygous, recessive, heterozygous, or homozygous.
Exactly.
prominent.
Exactly. And that's what I was getting at when I said the VDR. That's they test that on the 23andMe as well. Yep. Absolutely. I think that's right. So you're on a realm of vitamin D at 10,000, MagGlycinate 240. You're doing the K, which is good. A lot of people just do the D3 and then don't do the K, and the K is really necessary for absorbing it for some people. Not everybody needs it, but most people need to supplement the extra K2, and I've started to do that. For people who are vegan who don't want to do the D or the K because they're not vegan, Vitamin Code does a K2 and a D3 that are vegan. They're food grown on yeast and probiotics and all. So that's an option. And I've seen it work dramatically for people who are vegan and do that. Iodorol 12.5. How long have you been on Iodorol 12.5?
That was started, I think, about 2 years ago after I got my first thermogram down in Florida. There was a slight abnormality, and he recommended the iodine.
Okay. So here, what we're looking for here, this osteoporosis is troubling, and we want to know why it's not reversing. So we're looking for clues. We're looking for what's in here that could be contributing. We mentioned in the previous case about lead, and if you have high lead levels, that can cause osteoporosis, so in spite of all the stuff that you're doing. So we also know that gluten can affect the bones. Gluten can cause inflammation of the bones. Gluten can affect the bone density. It can eat away at the bones. So there's two things like that. So we're looking for clues that Debbie may be able to just simple things that she may be able to shift to get her bones to start repairing. So other things, she's taken poly-MVA we've talked about before because your mother was on that when we did her case, and the silver salt, and you put yourself on that because you had access to it, and it's for cancer, and your mom was dealing with that. Is that my memory, as my memory serves me?
The poly-MVA can be taken by healthy people who don't have cancer as a preventive.
As a preventative.
I'm still in contact occasionally with Dr. Garnett. He's still alive in his research lab on Long Island, and he was my high school mentor, and he's the inventor of poly-MVA. So I got very interested when I found it had actually come to market. He'd been working on it for 40 years. So I decided to just take a half teaspoon a day as a preventive.
The preventative, yeah.
Given the family
history, right. The biased, are you doing this based on blood work, 24-hour urine? How are you determining that and monitoring that?
Yes, I did with salivary hormones, and I've included those, and I have two or three of them now. And then my colleague here in Indiana is A4M certified, and he's guiding me through the hormones. We've made a couple of changes in the dosing based on the results of the salivary hormones.
Have you looked at the 24-hour urine that Meridian does, where they go through those, they do the comparisons, and you get to see all the estrogen metabolites? The 2:16 ratio in particular, which helps you to determine your risk of osteoporosis?
No, we haven't, and part of it was being able to compare with the same lab.
Yeah.
I had started out with diagnostics and had two of those, and the parameters and ranges, and in fact, I think they do, like you say, urine instead of saliva, would make it very difficult to compare, so we decided for now to just stick to the same diagnostics. And I don't know what you're feeling on that.
It doesn't have the biggest problem is it doesn't do the metabolites. You can go ahead and do something, you know, a smaller thing. I think the Estranex test that Metametrics does includes some of those metabolites, but I think it's important to see the metabolites. Even though it is a different way of measuring it, you can continue to monitor the total levels via the saliva if that's what you want to do, but at least to see if the metabolites are off. Or you can help yourself, I don't know if you, I haven't seen DIM listed, DIM or I3C.
I don't think we've tested those.
Well, DIM and I3C would be supplements, diindolmethane and indole-3-carbinol. Those are cruciferous metabolites that help to enhance the estrogen metabolites. And so if you don't know, that's one thing to do that you can do there. So, yeah, other than that, look into the Estranex test and of course, look at the meridian. I think you might be able to do a subset of the meridian just to see. But it would be good to see the metabolites just because you're not responding to the all that great stuff. 2-3 years ago, switched from primarily meat-based to more vegetarian meat less than 5 times a week. So you do it, you have a couple of days a week that you're doing non-meat stuff. More raw foods, less free-range poultry, eggs, and meat. Trying to go gluten-free is, okay, so here's a line. You guys are all going to hear this. Trying to go gluten-free as soon as I can come up with enough foods you can eat. There's a ton of them. And gluten-free is mandatory if you're trying to get your bone health back. So okay. I would cut with the trying, and I would just decide to go gluten-free. Was exercising and need to resume, so absolutely for the bone health. Are you familiar with the program Strong Women Stay Young?
No.
It's an excellent program. She's done tons of research. She's got studies to back it up. It's a very specific exercise program with weights twice a week at 40 minutes or 4 times a week at 20 minutes, isolating particular body parts, but doing very specific moves in a very specific controlled manner. And she's done pre- and post-bone density tests with large groups of women. And she talks about in the book one woman who her daughter was a marathon runner or triathlete or some really heavy-duty athlete. And the mom started on this program, started out very osteoporotic, went on this program, improved her bone density, and then the daughter tested, and the mom actually got better bone density by that point than the daughter. So it's something I would look into it. Go on Amazon, Strong Women Stay Young.
It's a book?
It's a book. Yep, she has pictures of all the exercises. You need some different weights of dumbbells and ankle weights. Ankle weights that you can stick them in that would just constantly increase them as you get stronger. She recommends that. I laughed when I read the book because she recommended 20-pound ankle weights. And I'm like, 20-pound? Who can do 20-pound ankle weights? So I went out to the store and I looked for them. And they have little inserts that you can put in them to get them up to 20. But you can start out at a pound. And you progressively get. And I went into the store and I said, I need these weights. And he goes, well, we only have 10 pounds. And he looked at me and goes, what do you need 20 pounds for? There's no way you're going to be able to lift. I said, well, I'm going to do this program, and this is what they recommend. So went somewhere else and got the weights and started doing them. They recommend you start at a pound and then go to two and then three. I said, no, I'm strong. I ended up starting out at about 7, and within a couple of weeks I was at 12, so I was really glad I hadn't invested in the 10s. And within about a month I was up to 19 pounds.
And wow.
Yeah. On some of the moves. Some of the moves I had to take some out but for most part I was over 15 on everything. So it's a really good thing for improving your strength. It doesn't take a lot of time. You can actually sit in the chair and do a lot of the exercises because there's abductor and adductor stuff that you can do sitting in a chair or standing up holding onto the arm of a chair. So I'd highly recommend it. The arm weights are pretty similar, but it's been proven to help with bone density. So read it, see what you think, and look into it. I would highly recommend that, and anybody that's working with somebody with osteoporosis. Now, going back to herbs and supplements, what I don't see in here that I would love to see you adding here would be some of the herbs that support bone density. You're doing some of the isolated synthetic type supplements, and that may or may not be fine, but I would go with things like nettles and horsetail. Things with silica, high in silica, because oftentimes that's the missing link in the bone density issue. And they also have high levels of all the minerals. You can do that as adding a couple of tablespoons of nettles to your morning smoothies or soups or salad dressings. You can cook them into a soup. You can do a nettle infusion, although I don't think you get quite as much calcium from it because calcium is in the actual leaves. So if you're going to do an infusion, then also take the wet leaves after you've done that and throw them in your soups. It can be pretty dramatic. And I worked with David Winston, who is my herbalist mentor. He he talked about how he would have people going out with these big bags of this stuff, and he'd do pre and post bone densities, and in 6 months they were improving their bone density. And I have actually, several of my people actually, you know, some people you know you're going to work with will not go back for the follow-up tests. But I had one person that all she listened to me on was green smoothies and the horsetail nettle stuff. And she started doing that, and she said she started eating less sugar just because the green smoothies made her feel like she didn't want as much, but she really wasn't going to give up her caffeine, and she wasn't going to give up her gluten. And in 6 months, she improved her bone density. She went from in the osteoporosis range to back out into the osteopenia range. So
wow.
I think it's worth adding. If you really want to, you can get pills. Herbalist and Alchemist has one. I think it's called OsteoBuild or OsteoGuard or something like that. But really, it's so inexpensive to go to Mountain Rose Herbs and get the whole herbs.
Really. What's it called? Mountain what?
Mountain Rose
Herbs. Mountain what?
Mountain Rose, R-O-S-E. Mountain Rose. Yeah.
And they send you the actual leaf
herbs? Yeah, you get a bag for $10. You can get a pound of nettles and a pound of horsetail. The horsetail does better if you make an infusion with it, so you basically can pour boiling water over it in a mason jar overnight, and the next day you've got some really nice horsetail. You can do the same with the nettles if you want. With the horsetail, unless you, and then you can take the pulp of all of it and throw it in the blender. But with the horsetail, it seems that if you don't heat it, infuse it, then it may antagonize vitamin B1. So it's important to do that. So those are some things right off the top. And I know this is not, you know, supposed to be a protocol course. It's all about assessments, but I can't help but throw all these things in. And these are the things to ask, right? So the questions I ask, just for references, oh, are you taking any herbs for this? Like, oh, what about the estrogen balances? Those are things that you want to be asking about. We're looking for what's missing, right? Because Debbie's doing a lot here. She's doing a lot of stuff, and yeah, she's helped her problem with the cough, but this bone thing is still problematic. So commit to going to get that D3 kit, you know, using it and doing it and sending it in so you can see where you're at with that. And you want to maintain as close to 100 as you can. Internist board certified before helping with the osteoporosis and the neurosciences products. You had you on. Are you still on those? Oh, you couldn't afford to continue. Those products are expensive. And if you go back and listen to my neurotransmitter thing, I'm not sure that testing is really as valid as it's supposed to be. I've done it with a few people. I've used those products. I haven't seen the dramatic results I've seen with other things, so I just didn't continue. Eating more produce. No soda, yay, cutting way back on sugar. So how much sugar do you eat, Debbie?
I probably have chocolate at least 4 days a week, some chocolate. And I don't eat cookies. I don't eat pastries. I don't have bread in the house anymore. I've really cut way back. It's more when I'm out and about and in groups with people that there's not a whole lot of options. I had creme brulee at a CME meeting the other night.
Yeah. So how committed are you to get your bone density up? And get yourself as healthy as possible.
Really want to do this, and it's been feeling like I've got so much going on. I haven't had time to sit down, get a protocol. You know, I'm constantly researching, I'm constantly taking classes and online, but I haven't got a good list of what are the foods I can eat so that I can make myself a full menu and have safe, healthy foods in the house and get rid of all the rest of the bad stuff.
So eat real food. I heard somebody say that on a seminar a couple of weeks ago. I loved it. Eat real food. Just eat real food. If it comes in a package,
yeah,
don't eat it.
Right, stuff that comes out of the ground or grows on trees.
Yeah. And if you're doing a little meat, fine, as long as it's organic and free-range and grass-fed and that kind of thing. But it's real food. It's not like salami, sausage, pastrami, bologna, that sort of stuff, right? It's not packaged, processed stuff.
Right. Yeah. I don't eat that stuff anymore.
Yeah.
I made major changes over the last 3-4 years in my food.
Which says you can go further, and I think you need to go further. I think you need to go gluten-free and give it a chance.
Yeah.
Give it a chance to get you in balance.
Yeah, I keep feeling like initially it was just for the IBS, but I've been thinking that the gluten may have an impact on a lot of other stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And when you say not knowing what else to eat, even if you were to just go buy gluten-free whatever that's out there, but really, lots of fresh whole vegetables. If you're going to do grains, whole grains, quinoa, millet, buckwheat, those sorts of things. However, when we look at your labs, I did peek at your labs. You have some glucose issues going on.
Yes, so, and that's been a couple of years. I'm getting nervous about that too. Yep.
Okay, and there's no need to get nervous about it. It's taking action on it. Okay? So learning, the whole thing I go through in the Before Be Gone program, that 30-day menu plan and book, I mean, I could just give that to somebody and say, just follow this for a month. And it's going to make a tremendous difference because it's going to be low glycemic and get things under control. But, yeah, those are things that you have to watch for. So nuts, seeds, lots of vegetables, your whole meats a couple of times a week. Chocolate. I could give you guys a little recipe. I just had chocolate on the break. It was something I made last night. I took almond butter and coconut butter and mixed them together. I put in a little bit of cacao powder, and I put in cordyceps mushroom powder, ashwagandha, and astragalus powder. And I stirred that all up. And then I added some carob because I like carob and chocolate together, calcium and magnesium combination. And then I added some almond extract and some butterscotch stevia. And I stirred it all together, and coconut. Can't forget the coconut. I added whole pieces of coconut, just a handful of that just to give it texture. And then I kind of stirred it really well until made it into these little molds. I have these little, what they call silicone molds. I could have just rolled them into balls, stuck them in my freezer. So if I get the urge for something sweet and tasty, I go there, and I eat my adrenal support candy. So those are the kinds of things you can do, and literally it took me 5 minutes to do. That sound good?
Yeah, it does, except for the mushroom. I'm not a mushroom person.
So I was about the mushroom, but you don't taste it. That's the thing. It's so supportive, and they're so immune supportive. I think I might have put some reishi in there too. But leave that out. You know, I'm not saying you have to use the exact ones. You could have put rhodiola in there. You could have just put ashwagandha in there. You could have put holy basil, whatever. Maca. Maca, great. You know, any of those things. Or something else. Or leave that out and just do it. But the adrenal support or system support, thyroid support, et cetera. You still crave pretzels. So you said you're probably eating gluten daily. So how comfortable are you cutting it down to once a week for a couple of weeks? Would that help, or can you go cold turkey?
I don't yet have enough foods that I can eat in the house to not eat any gluten. That's part of the dilemma I'm in. I'm not yet knowledgeable enough about herbs and all the other stuff. I'm new at this. I'm a newbie.
Okay. So I'm going to ask our group, is anybody on the call, if you're willing to buddy up with Michaeline, and I'm not Michaeline, Debbie, I'm thinking Ghislaine because Ghislaine is a raw foods teacher, but somebody on the call who would just feel comfortable just chatting with Debbie and helping her to come up with some alternatives for so she can go gluten-free. Anybody? Raise your hand with a 1 if you're willing to help Debbie with that. Cynthia, Michaeline, Beverly, okay? We're here for you. They'll help you.
I appreciate that.
They'll help you. Okay? Because you know what? Of course we want to help you, but we know what kind of reach you can have. And if you get really comfortable with this, then you're going to be sharing this with your patients. and more people are going to get help in really deep ways. So would you guys maybe type into the chat box a way that she can contact you? And maybe you could just hook up with each of them for half an hour or so, get some ideas?
That would be great. Thank you.
Okay. You got it. You have really good habits here. I just want to make sure you know that, right? No alcohol, no caffeine, no soft drinks. So we can get those last of it out. It's going to really help all the money you're spending in supplements do its thing, right? To really do what it needs to do.
Do you think with a DEXA score of minus 3.5 that it is even possible for me to get it out of the osteoporosis range?
I think based on what you're doing right now, no, but if you can upgrade it, I think it may be possible. What did your show, we haven't opened it yet, but what did your NTX show?
It showed normal turnover. So I'm sort of left scratching my head. I guess it's keeping me at the stable point. That
it's keeping you stable.
It doesn't tell you anything about bone building. It tells you that you're doing normal resorption.
But normal for your age or normal? Normal meaning healthy. That's a thing to look at because a lot of the times they'll look at it, what is it for your age? Oh, yeah, you're just like every other woman your age. Is that what you want? No, I don't think so.
I think that's a good point, but I was presuming the report at the bottom said normal turnover, and most of the osteoporosis drugs prevent resorption. And I can't remember if it was you or someone else who made the analogy that it's like taking a house that got flooded and water damaged, and instead of taking down the old rotting boards, just putting up new boards over them. That's what osteoporosis drug.
Right.
So I'm interpreting the bone resorption test to mean that I am resorbing and taking down the rotten stuff, but I'm not building enough new stuff.
But you're not building enough new stuff to, yeah. So you're just staying status quo.
Which they're telling me is good because normal for age is to continue on a decline, but I'm not satisfied with that.
Right. No, I totally get it. Well, there's things that you can do here. I think the going gluten-free, the going sugar-free, that's going to make a huge difference. I would look at that at the estrogen ratios and maybe adding some DIM or I3C or just lots and lots and lots more cruciferous vegetables can be helpful. She had a 115 fasting glucose in 2011. Now it's 107, but this is June. Where should it be, Debbie?
Under 95.
Under 90 actually for ideal, if you're looking for ideal. Okay, so do you have a glucose meter?
I might have an old one here.
Go buy a new one. $10. Walgreens. Okay? You know how to test glucose. You know how to do a finger prick on yourself. You know how to read those because I'm sure you've taught a person or two in your time. Get yourself a glucose meter. Start testing your glucose. Eliminate any foods that make your glucose go above 110. And I'm giving you the shortcut version of the Before Be Gone program. And I forgot to tell you guys earlier how you can get going with, but we'll talk about that later. I'm going to be starting up my insulin resistance practitioner training next month. So, but any foods that make it go above 110 at the half hour to an hour mark after you eat it, you eliminate. That's going to allow your insulin receptor. Half hour to an hour is when you peak, somewhere around 45 minutes. Some people it's a half hour, some people it's an hour. You test your glucose before, you test it after. And if you go above 110, you're already at 107 when you wake up in the morning. Now, some people wake up at 107 and then they go down during the day, but chances are there's not going to be a whole lot of foods that don't do that. So if it means that you don't eat at all, then what you do is nothing that makes your glucose go up more than 20 points.
And I was kind of horrified when I saw the hemoglobin A1C. It's the first time I tested it when I did the life extension testing.
And let's look at it. Hemoglobin A1C is
5.8.
It means you have an average blood glucose of around 128 or so. There's a tool. If you just go type it in, I had it open before my computer crashed, but if you just type in hemoglobin A1C to average glucose conversion, you can type it in. A lot of the reports are giving it. I don't have that open, but sometimes it shows on the actual lab report. It'll say what that means your average glucose is. And if your average glucose is running above 100, that's high, because that means that when you're sleeping, it's still above 100, and you're waking up with it at 107. So, yeah, this is an important piece. Your bun is actually a little bit high. See any other signs of kidney stress? I'd watch it. Just watch it, maybe.
As many pills as I take, it can't be from lack of hydration.
No. You're drinking a lot. Everything else here is green, carbon dioxide, so you're a little bit on the alkaline acid side, right? 22, I always got to check that low. Hypochlorhydria, hypoparathyroid, deficiency of vitamin D, essential fatty acids or we're looking at calcium. Carbon dioxide, sorry. Acidosis. Probably acidosis. And vitamin B1 deficiency is a possibility. I know you're taking some B vitamins, but that can also contribute to imbalances in blood sugar. So carbon dioxide, alkaline diet. Do you have an alkaline diet chart?
I do have a chart somewhere. And again, okay. I haven't sat down to put it all together into a viable...
Just take it, and it's just... Like, overall, say, how much of my food has been? Is 75% of my food from the alkaline side? Okay, good to go. It really, you don't have to sit down. You're a perfectionist, it sounds like. You got to get it all right. Just look at the chart. I have given that chart to people and said, look, the first thing I want you to do is just eat 75% from this side, 25% from that side. And they have, within days, improved their acid-base balance. So... look at that. Get rid of the gluten and the sugar, and you'll immediately put yourself way more alkaline. Okay. So your calcium is a teeny bit on the low side. Phosphorus is okay. Your protein's low. Are you doing enzymes, Debbie?
No, not. I've been trying to figure out what kind of enzymes. What should I use? Where should I get them? I'm trying to restructure my whole list of supplements because I'm taking a lot of stuff and I'm not sure how much
right.
it's helping.
Right. What's helping?
I don't know what are the best enzymes. I was using, what is it? There was a product from Mayer Eisenstein. Has an enzyme, a chewable, but I think I need more than that.
So I'm thinking stomach acid might be low. Did you do in the assessments section, we have the digestion assessment. Go do that and see what your score is for the acidity, for hypochlorhydria. Bitters might be helpful, like we talked about Glenn was doing, herbal bitters. Doing an HCL challenge, although I would probably not do that with you, given your history of the esophagitis, until you've done a bunch of repair, like with DGL or slippery elm, just to kind of coat everything and make sure your mucus lining is strong enough. But there's some signs here that there's hypochlorhydria.
I tried using some DGL, some chewables on that, and I wasn't sure is that worth continuing. That was right after meals. This is chocolate-flavored DGL.
Sounds good. I would prefer you do DGL before meals. I like to do that in slippery elm before meals, just to coat the mucus. You have irritable bowel still?
Not like it used to be. It's more controlled, but very different from the patterns of most Americans. 3 to 4 BMs a day, soft. And if I have a heavy meal or eat out at a restaurant, I better get to a bathroom within 15 minutes.
Okay.
I have no problem with transit time.
Yeah, it's too quick probably, and that's why you've got a little bit low protein and calcium. But stomach acid is the other thing I would think about. But you've got to be careful with the stomach acid. So I would maybe get some herbal bitters. Gaia has one. Herbalist and Alchemist has one. And take it about 15 minutes before the meal. Or forget another supplement. Just 15 minutes before each meal, grab some arugula, dandelion, chew them to a pulp, and hold them in your mouth for 5 minutes. Just while you're making the rest of your meal, you're just kind of sucking away at this really bitter stuff, and it'll stimulate the whole. It's a cholagogue, which means it'll help move the bile, and it will help stimulate stomach acid production. So
about taking betaine hydrochloride. What do you think about taking betaine
hydrochloride? Well, I think if you're going to do it, you want to do it. We have in the digestive module, there is a description of how to do an HCL challenge. You want to do that really carefully, and it could be very helpful. But don't just, like, pick up the bottle and say, oh, yeah, take two with meals. No. Do it controlled the way I have it described in there.
And where is that? Which module?
The digestion. Yeah.
From this class?
Yep, I'm pretty sure it is because it's a way to assess, so it should be. If it's not, let me know, and I'll put it there because it should be. Your ALT is a tiny bit high, but I don't see any other liver things, so it's just kind of keep an eye on it. Your GGT, well, your GGT used to be. Did you used to do a lot of alcohol?
Never.
Never?
Nope.
And your iron is high. Do you take iron supplements?
No, and the multivitamin I take has no iron in it.
Okay, I'm going to say this one more time, Debbie, now that I've seen your TSH. Get off the gluten. Get off the gluten. Get off the gluten. You didn't test your antibodies. I think you should. Your TPO and your ATT, or ATA, antithyroglobulin antibody. Okay? But it used to be a 4, now it's a 7. Your T4 itself is low, so something's happening with that thyroid, and I'm suspicious that there might be a problem. You're taking iodine, and sometimes iodine is contraindicated with thyro. With that, I would actually do an iodine load test as well.
I've actually done that, and I'm trying to remember what it was. It's like 67 or something like that.
Yeah, so
I think
that
it
means
was
you
in
need
a
it.
Normal.
Well, actually, it should be like 90.
Higher. Maybe it was like, yes, I was just going to say, I think it was higher. I can
right,
that
but if you continue to take 12.5 iodorol, you may be pushing yourself into excess. And I'm concerned. I would recommend, so we're talking about follow-up testing for this, right? Your free T3 is low. Your free T4 is low. So it's not really a conversion issue. They're both somewhat equally low, right? So it's more related to the thyroid's not producing, 5.6. Clearly the thyroid is, for some reason, it's most likely not the lack of iodine because you're taking 12.5 a day. It's possibly related to antibodies. So we get that done.
Okay.
Okay. So antibodies for thyroid. Your white blood cell count's low. People with autoimmune things have low white blood cell counts. So there is possibly an autoimmune process going on here. Your hemoglobin is low, even though your iron is high. Who wants to tell me what that means or can mean? You remember?
Okay. The question was, if the hemoglobin is low and the iron is high?
Yeah.
Is that an absorption issue?
Usually, it can be. I don't think so. Right, because you've got enough iron in your blood, but it's not being converted into hemoglobin. It's not being put into hemoglobin. So it's a conversion issue, and it's a specific nutrient that I'm thinking about. Put on, open up, Deborah. But good try. Thank you.
Okay. Deborah, go ahead.
You're close. You're getting warm.
B6,
let's see what Michaeline has to say.
B12.
B12, close.
Oh, B6. T5P.
B6, yeah. Yeah, B6. B6 is required to convert iron into hemoglobin. So when you see somebody who with a high serum iron and a low hemoglobin, you also look at their alkaline phosphatase. Her alk phosphatase is normal. It's on the low end, but that's often the case of there could be other confounding things going on there, but oftentimes when the alk phos is low, there's a B6 deficiency. But I would be suspicious. It's not guaranteed that that's it, but I would be looking at your B6 status. Your hematocrit is good. Your MCV is fine, MCHC. Most likely you're just fine with your folic acid and B12. However, your RDW is 13.2. That might be related to the super high iron. It's barely over, it's getting better, but I'd be looking at that. It's related to the hemoglobin being low. It's just saying there's a sign of it's like fasting in the sea of plenty, right? You got plenty of iron, but your hemoglobin's low. What's that up? Check your B6. I would get some P5P, about 25 milligrams a day. Okay.
What was that?
P5P, pyridoxal 5-phosphate. It's an activated form of vitamin B6, very inexpensive. Most places have it, Pure Encapsulations, Thorne Research, all the good brands have it.
Okay, and what was the dose again?
I would go about 25 milligrams a day. It could be a little bit more. Some of them make them in 37. But around 25 should do it.
Okay. Yep.
All right. What else do we have here? We have hemoglobin A1C we've already talked about and fasting insulin 6.4. I love to see fasting insulin like 2 or 3. Yours was less than 3 before. Interestingly enough, that's when your glucose was higher.
That less than 3 was the one that came with the salivary testing, so I don't know if that's reliable.
It's a different scale.
Okay, right? This is the first time I actually did a blood fasting.
Oh, okay, yeah, it's comparing apples and oranges. Yeah, you can't compare. So 6.4, great. Okay, we got to get that down. All right, and you're going to do that by getting rid of gluten and getting rid of sugar. That's going to take care of a lot of the, because you've really pretty much gotten rid of other stuff like breads and things. So, absolutely. You have work to do, and I think it's going to be productive work, Debbie. And you're keeping your D pretty consistent here. And it might be good to bump it up just a little bit. If you were at...
I haven't tested it. I bumped it to 10,000. I'll bet it's going to be a lot higher.
I bet it's going to be better. Yeah. Yeah, if you were at 5,000 all along here and you bumped it to 10, yep, that should do it. Just don't let it go too long.
I don't want you to excess. It's done this week.
Okay. Cool. Well, this is 6113. And you have a 67 there. So I'm a little confused here. Did you just type that in the... Type it there twice, by mistake.
Not sure. I may have put it in the wrong date because I haven't done one this year.
You haven't done one this year. Okay. So, yeah, you might have been a 612 or a 2012 one because you didn't have a column for that if you did it last year. Oh, let's see. You wrote the dates in there. 6/2012 is when that one was. The one before that was 5/2011. Here we go. You guys see that? We just had the columns were skewed away. That explains it. Okay. Yeah, so it didn't go up at all for a whole year. And now we're hoping that it goes up. All right. Good for it. Go for it. Okay, so Debbie, tell me what your good C-reactive protein, tell me what you are going to follow up with in terms of lab and in terms of lifestyle.
I got to get myself a menu plan and get off gluten and get rid of the sugar. I still got to have an occasional chocolate, or is that really going to mess it up?
You do what I just made. If you don't like all the herbs in it, just take the coconut and the cacao powder and sweeten it with xylitol or stevia. And keep
or agave?
Them in your fridge.
Or is that
no. That is out the window.
Agave.
You are done with agave.
No kidding, even the agave. Wow.
No, agave no good. And you know what? Test your blood sugars. The blood sugar meter is going to tell you. It doesn't lie. It doesn't lie. So you're going to get a blood sugar meter.
Okay.
Right?
All right. Got to really, really buckle down on this.
Yeah, but the thing is, you're going to know. You're going to know. And once you know, you're not going to want to eat the foods that shoot your sugars up.
I mainly have to get some good foods that I feel are satisfying that I can get easily, and a lot of it is now getting fresh produce and more frequent trips. It's hard to get to a farmer's market. I don't trust the stuff in the grocery, but I guess some of that stuff.
Let me ask you a question, Debbie. Which do you trust more, the non-organic produce in the grocery or the gluten that you're getting wherever you're getting it, pretzels or creme brulee?
I still got to go with the produce. Yeah, that's still good.
Yeah, I mean, right, exactly. All right, you're good to go. Let me just, your DHEA is 1. Oh, you got adrenal stuff going on here, girl.
And that was a big change from the other one. I've done 3 of these so far, and the other one was not so low.
Yeah, so you're working on the female hormones, but you're not working on the adrenals. What are you doing to support your adrenals?
I put some testosterone. I just have a new prescription that'll be arriving any day, and I think he added a little testosterone to it.
Yeah, but that's not supporting your adrenals. Your sex hormones go out of balance mainly as a result of your adrenals going out of balance. So addressing the sex hormones is going backwards at it. You need to address the adrenals. And your DHEA, that's completely in the toilet, okay?
What do I do about that?
That's a whole nother call. Yeah. Right? We have 3 hours of what do you do about that in the other program, the year-long program. Support your adrenals. Go do some research. Support your adrenals. We're going to be here's how you can do it. We're going to be doing a program called CAFE, Correcting Adrenal Fatigue. I don't remember what the AU means. It was a cute acronym we came up with, and we'll be announcing that soon. That'll give you all the protocols for adrenal. It's going to be real inexpensive. Let me just look at your bone resorption real quick. That does look fine, doesn't it?
Yeah, they were right smack in the middle of the range.
Oh, here's your ASI. This is an old ASI. You don't have a recent ASI, do you? This was 2 years ago. This isn't too bad. You got a valley at noon. You're high in the morning. Overall, that doesn't look too bad. Your DHEA was okay, so you've gone downhill since this one. Right, your DHEA was 5, which is, you know, it's not good, but it's not terrible. Your total cortisol load, 34, not bad. Your ratio here, 34:5, not bad. Your insulin, I don't go by that. Progesterone was normal. Okay, here's the deal. Total salivary IgA depressed. That is an indication of long-term chronic adrenal stress, and it's continued to go down. So you need to be supporting it. Even if you just want to get started with a basic formula, go to Life Extensions and look for an adrenal formula. That'll at least get you started. But you'll learn a lot more when we do the course. It's too much to go into right now. And if anybody wants to, again, volunteer to work with Debbie on helping her get her adrenals, raise your hand with a 5.
Preparations like Dr. Mark Stengler's adrenals?
I don't know. I don't know his preparations. I haven't been, haven't been following his stuff. Okay.
Deb, hi. I was wondering if Debbie was having any, if she's going for sugar or going for those kinds of things, if she was doing that around that noontime or into the early afternoon before her cortisol actually comes back up to give herself a boost, because it just looks like she's dipping so low, and I wondered if licorice the drops might be beneficial.
Right.
Midday.
Well, licorice might be. I'd want to make sure you don't have any blood pressure issues. Do you have any blood pressure issues?
No, my blood pressure runs 90 to 100 over 60.
Well, licorice might just be a good friend for you. licorice could be something that would be helpful. I would probably mix it with something like ashwagandha to give it some, to balance out some of the stimulating things. But again, we're working off a 2-year-old test. So
yeah,
not knowing.
It's just a thought. If she's having sugar cravings and around that time, then that might lead her to believe that she should investigate that further.
Right. Is that true? What's happening, Linda? Debbie.
Not really. It's more in the evening.
Yeah.
That I take the chocolate.
It's in the evening. I think it's glucose. I think it's your hormone dysregulation. What do you usually eat for breakfast?
I tried your chia pudding this past week, and I like that.
The great start to the day. Protein within the first hour, and the chia with some coconut, with some nuts sprinkled on it, some green powder, green smoothie without the fruit, some of the nice savory ones. Hemp seed milk, something like that, to start your day.
Yeah, my smoothies often have fruit, banana or peach or something, and then I put some green stuff in it, occasionally some avocado. I use almond milk. I don't drink any milk anymore. I use almond.
Good.
I'll put seeds, flax seeds. I'm using coconut oil instead of butter anymore. And I'm
good
trying to vary what kind of green stuff to put into smoothies.
Yeah. So I think the blood sugar is a biggie. I think the adrenals are contributing to the blood sugar imbalance, and the diet's contributing to the blood sugar imbalance. So, we don't have time to go into the entirety of the Before Be Gone, the whole concepts and theory, but the concept of starting your day with protein rather than carb, keeping a really low-carb breakfast, when you start the day with a carb, with sugars, and banana is considered sugar, then what happens is you crave carbs in the evening. It just happens that way, and it throws off your leptin, your insulin, and all that. And definitely being part of the Before Be Gone thing and learning those pieces is going to help you dramatically, and going through the 30-day metabolic reset that we do in there will help you dramatically. And it'll help you to be able to help a whole lot of people, very much so. A good point, Deborah. I would hesitate to put anybody on licorice without seeing a current day SI, because you don't want to throw them off if it's shifted. And now it's up there and it's down at another time. I'm a little bit cautious with licorice. But it is a good point. So running another ASI. So summary. Retest the thyroid antibodies, ASI, vitamin D. What else did we say? I think those were the main ones for testing.
No more gluten.
And then on the lifestyle thing, it was gluten, sugar, any kind of starches, and watching it. But get a glucose meter and see what you can and can't eat. Okay?
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You've got a lot going. You guys learned a lot from going through this case, because there was a lot of little complications. And then on the bone density side, get yourself some nettles and horsetail. Something's with silica in it. And really see if that helps to increase it. And then, the other testing was somehow looking at the estrogen metabolites, whether it's the Estranex test from Metametrics or the 24-hour urine steroid hormones from Meridian. Okay?
Okay. Yep.
Great.
Thank you, Leslie.
Oh, yes. You're welcome.